Welcome to Mindful Mother, a podcast by Esk and Ivy. Welcome back to Mindful Mother. Apologies for the hiatus. It's been quite some time, but we're back with a bang today with the lovely Julia, who is a mum of three. She's a birth educator and a doula. Welcome, Julia. It's so lovely to have you here today.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
Would you like to start just by telling everybody a little bit about you, the sort of stuff that you do, where people can find you maybe?
Sure. Okay. So like you said, I'm a mum of three, and not long after my third little person came on the scene, I started doing birth education. So classes and workshops and things. And I've been doing that for about four years, and then decided that it wasn't enough. So then I trained up as a doula, so a birth and postnatal doula, which is essentially someone who supports a birthing person and a new parent. So I'm in and around Midlothian and Edinburgh. I've always got things on, ideas of new things. I do buggy walks. No end to the things that I want to do to support expectant and new parents.
Wonder Woman. She is. She's a Wonder Woman. And I suppose that is why you're here today. What we're going to talk about today is birthrights. And obviously as a doula and in your birth education, that must be something that you discuss a lot with the parents and the expectant parents that you meet in your day-to-day life.
It is. But, you know, I was listening to a podcast myself yesterday about this. And, you know, it's one thing to teach, to talk about birthrights and to talk about not just what you have the right to do or not to do in birth, but also what's important, how to make it your own experience and how to sort of reclaim it as your own. And it's one thing to talk about all of that in a class and to arm someone with all the tools in theory. But it's something completely different to actually enable somebody to use those skills. You know, I often hear people talking about empowering women and birthing people to take back birth and to make it their own and to make it a really positive experience. Mm-hmm. But actually, I don't think that I or any kind of birth educator or any other kind of title, I don't think that I can do that to a person. I think it's something that a person can only do themselves. Mm-hmm. I guess kind of, you know, like that idea that we have about changing someone. You know, you can't, you can love your partner very much and desperately want to change one little thing about them. But you can never make them make that change. They have to do it themselves. They have to want to do it themselves.
And I think it's something probably, you know, when we fall pregnant or when we're pregnant for the first time, you know, how there's so much going on. Your body's changed and you're preparing for a little person. You've got to get cots. You've got to get your overnight bag packed. And I guess there might be oversharing here. This might just be me, but something like birthrights is not often at the top of our list of things to think about, isn't it? You think, I've got to stay fit and healthy, maybe I'll do some hypnobirthing, maybe I'm going to do this. And birthrights kind of falls down the list of things. And I suppose, you know, where to start. And I've had ladies ask me in class or ask me at retreats to say, where do I begin? And I think, I wouldn't actually know where to begin. So I'm not really sure if I can sort of say where to begin. So, you know, you're saying it's a change that's coming from within. So where are the, if it's on your list to start thinking about birthrights, what sort of thing can you start to do to prepare yourself, I suppose?
Well, I think there's kind of two answers to that. I'm going to start and then I'm probably going to forget that I said two. So you might have to
remember.
The first thing is kind of actually going back to the start, I think. So there's a sort of proactive thing you can do now, and there's a historical understanding. So side of things. So I don't know if you've come across people referring to the history of birth as the her story of birth, sort of reclaiming that as the female story, the her story. And kind of just looking back and understanding where we've come from and how it's all changed. And, you know, we used to birth in communities surrounded by women and women who had been through it all. And, you know, your kind of typical wise woman. And actually, this wasn't just birth. You know, this was everything from puberty to menstruation to pregnancy to birth to menopause. I mean, it was all this female-led community that guided girls and women through all of that. And when it came to birth specifically, it was women who were there by your side attending your birth. And I think attending is a really important word, because it wasn't interfering, it wasn't making themselves the center of it. It was the woman, the birthing person at the very center, and other attendants with them. And then we got all this moved, I mean, skip a few hundred years and all my ranting about the patriarchy. And now we're plonked in a hospital amongst strangers. And then when birth doesn't go to plan, we're blamed, our bodies are blamed, because it's all, mm-hmm. it's not gone to plan. It's not gone the way it should have gone, mm-hmm. should in inverted commas. Mm-hmm. And so actually just understanding that history is a really good sort of jumping off point, because, okay, we might not all have the ability or even have the desire to go back and, I don't know, have a home birth or have an unattended birth or whatever. That's definitely some people, the way some people are going, but definitely not everyone. But actually understanding what it was about that made things work so well. Mm-hmm. So it was a feeling of support and respect and being listened to, being seen, being safe, all these sort of feelings. And when I say safe, I don't mean safe in a clinical medical mm-hmm. sense. I mean like safe to move, to moo or roar or whatever sounds you want to make. Safe to say, I don't want to be in this position, I want to move into that position. Safe to say, I don't want you to touch me just now, or I do want you to touch mm-hmm. me just now, you know, that kind of safety. And so actually by really understanding what would make you feel safe, mm-hmm. it can actually have a really big effect on not just how birth goes, but what decisions you might make in the run up to it, even mm-hmm. where you might decide to give birth, who you might decide to have with you when you give birth. It's controversial, but if your birth partner doesn't make you feel safe, they shouldn't be in the room. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's that side to it. And then I did remember to come back to point number three. The other side is, and you know, we've talked about this a little bit, the idea of going into your appointments prepared. And that is, of course, if you choose to have appointments, because you don't have to report mm-hmm. your pregnancy to anyone. But going in with a notepad and a pen and writing down, or your phone, take your phone and record meetings. And it's not sort of to put pressure on your care providers. It's not from that perspective, but people, for one thing, are much more careful about what they say mm-hmm. when they know that it's being recorded one way or another. But also it means that you can go home and you can go, oh crap, I've completely forgotten what they said. Mm-hmm. And then you can remind yourself, and then you go and you can think to yourself, hey, but the thing they said at the end of the appointment actually didn't match up with the mm-hmm. stats they gave me at the beginning of the appointment. Something's not right there. And you can have that information in your head, and you can come back to them with that, and you can say, but you said this, but then you said that. And mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting point, Julia, actually. I think I don't know if this is a Scottish mother thing or if this is a generational thing, but you know, when I was growing up, you did not question medical teams. You sat there, and you know, it wasn't a discussion that you would have if, you know, the doctor said X, Y, or Z. Now, obviously, medical professionals say everything with the best will and the best intention, and I'm not for one second saying don't listen to the medical team. I'm not saying that at all, but I suppose where we're all, or particularly as a Scottish lady raised by a Scottish woman and a Scottish grandmother, you put on your best pants and you went off and you respected your doctor, right? So you would never have a conversation with them, where I suppose that's something that maybe we're all a bit more willing, and certainly not even from a pregnancy or a birth or a postnatal point of thing. I am now more willing to have conversations with my doctor about anything that's going on in my health. And I suppose it's the same with your medical team, your midwives. You know, we should feel empowered to be able to have a two-way conversation with them, rather than just a sort of, well, that is what I've been told and that's what I'm going to do, or to question things that don't feel right or feel that you can't speak up. So from a little point of view about when Katie was born, I had, like, every time I was palpated, it was painful, and I just thought, that must be normal. Now, in hindsight of everything that happened, I suspect I probably had an infection that was going on at the time and probably should have spoke up, but just thought, oh, that's normal, I don't want to speak up. And we're kind of guilty of that in everything that we do in life, aren't we? Oh, I'm not going to tell, or I don't want to create any problems. And I suppose getting over that kind of mindset is important, isn't it, for when you talk about birthrights and
I think a really important thing that helps you get over that is to remind yourself that you are paying for this service.
Yeah.
You know, when you do your click and collect at Tesco, and I don't know, you've ordered like potatoes and they don't have any potatoes left in stock, so they offer you a substitution and it's like, I don't know, mayonnaise. Would you accept the mayonnaise? No, you're going to go, that's not what I had planned for dinner tonight, so I'll not take that, thanks. Mm-hmm. Because you're paying for that. And you are paying for your care in the NHS. You have paid your taxes and they are working for you. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we forget that because we're socialized. I mean, women especially, but I don't think it's exclusive to females. We're socialized to shut up and do what we're told, like good little girls. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it really helps to just remember that you are a paying customer and that you deserve the very best care for your money. And that when you're not getting it, you have every right to say, I don't feel like I'm getting the care I need or I deserve. And I'd like to have somebody else, if that's okay. And that will be okay. And you'll get somebody else to look after you. Your example there about being palpated and hindsight wishing you'd said something. Mm-hmm. With my first, I at one point was left squatting over a bedpan in the middle, naked, in the middle of a brightly lit room to deliver a placenta. And at the time I felt horrendous doing it. And I thought, this is not right. But I went along with it because... Mm-hmm. I just thought, well, they know what they're doing and they know what's best, and I better just be quiet and do what I'm told. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in hindsight, that was totally the wrong thing for me. Mm-hmm. And it is really hard. You know, it's so easy to say we should feel empowered. We should stand up for ourselves. We should do this and that and the next thing. But it is so hard for so many people, including myself, to just say, actually, can we just stop a second and just think about this?
And I think in the moment as well, isn't it? It's difficult, you know, in some respects, labour and birth is a long process, but in other respects, it's actually quite short. Even with a 2 to 3 day labour, you know, it is still a short period where things can move quickly, they can take a turn quickly. So to pause and say, right, hang on, I want to find my voice in here, especially if things, you know, there's loops in the journey that are maybe not panning out quite as you'd expected, or there's maybe issues with you or your baby's health, then you are more likely to go with what you're being provided or what you're being told with the medical team. And then there was something that I was going to bring up with you. So if there's moments that you can pause to reflect on that, like a little chunk. So there's an acronym that I read about in a great book, Mindful Birthing. It's a great book that I've read that I was going to discuss with you, Julia, because you would explain it much better than me. And that is BRAIN, which is benefits, risks, alternatives, intuition, and nothing. So do you want to talk us through the BRAIN acronym? I can't even say it. Acronym. There we go.
Yeah, but you know, before I would just ask, because what you said was, if there's a moment to reflect, then this is a good thing to do. I would just say there is almost always a moment to reflect. It is so unusual that actually something needs to be done now and we don't have time to talk it through. It's really, really unusual. It can sometimes be presented as something is urgent, and actually if you question that and you say, could we have a moment to think it through, then actually the answer might be yes. But if you haven't asked, then you wouldn't have been given the opportunity. So it's good just to remember anyway off the bat that there is normally time to have a think. But yeah, so brain. Interestingly, the hospitals here in the Lothians have recently started putting up brain acronym posters.
Oh, hi. However,
oh, okay. I'm a little bit puzzled by it because they do it as B for brain benefits, sorry, R for risks, A for alternatives. Let's skip to N for nothing. But for some reason, their I stands for me and my baby. Which, to my knowledge, none of those words start with an I. So I'm a little bit confused by it. But so benefits and risks are where we start off with. There are always benefits and risks, right, to anything. And I always talk about this. We live in a risk-averse society. This isn't just birth and pregnancy. This is just life. You step out the door in the morning, there is a risk. You might trip over your doorstep. You might... I don't know, drive over the cat on the way down the drive. You know, there are risks in everything we do and there are benefits in everything we do. And it's good to remember that because this isn't just exclusive to birth. This is just life, risks and benefits. So any intervention or any lack of intervention or any decision we make in birth is going to have benefits and risks. Commonly, you might find that the benefits are spelled out a little bit more clearly than the risks. Well, it depends on which perspective you're coming from, I suppose. So, for example, you might be told, if we do this, the benefit is we're going to lessen your chance of this happening. You might not be told that it increases the chance of X, Y, and Z happening. Because your care provider might think that those things are less of a risk or less important or less relevant at that time. But they are there and they're important that you know what they are. So benefits and risks, always worth asking. Alternatives, there's almost always an alternative to anything. Again, unless it's a real, real emergency situation, which, as I said, it's rarer than you might think. An alternative can be a different medication from what's being suggested, a different pain relief. It might be doing nothing. It might be sort of delaying what's being suggested, saying let's come back in an hour and have a look at things then. It might be going to a different place. It might be something like, instead of being on the bed, getting in the pool or getting out of the pool and getting on the, you know, there's always an alternative to everything. Your intuition, I like to come back to, actually. And nothing is the last one. So nothing, just it's sort of active nothing. It doesn't really mean just sitting back and doing nothing. It means doing something that's not medical, that's not intervening with the course of your labor. Sometimes brain also gets written as T brain, and the T stands for time. And that's just starting off all of that by saying, do we have time? Which is kind of what I was saying at the beginning, just making sure that there is a few minutes to think about things. But so I always come back to intuition, the I, because I think that's the most important, actually, in so many ways. I think voicing your feelings about something is one of the biggest differences between that being a positive and a negative experience. Because I think if you look back on an experience and you go, do you know what? I knew the benefits and I knew the risks and I decided to do it and I was happy with it. But I had this funny feeling in my tummy and I didn't get an opportunity to talk about it. Then I think that's when you come away just not being okay with what happened, even if the course of events works out really well for you. It's just that niggling little feeling. So I think having an opportunity to talk about your intuition, your instinct, how you're feeling is really, really important. So brain as an acronym is a really good one to remember.
And again, the intuition, again, it comes down to what we were saying really before there, isn't it? That we have, or we certainly struggle to vocalize what we're feeling or what we're thinking. And I suppose actually from the medical team's point of view, you know, if they've got all the information, then they maybe make different decisions for you. And I think in hindsight, that's definitely not just with birth, with everything in life. We but have these
now. All the information, right? I'm going to stop you there. They don't have all the information. They have graphs and they've plot you on a graph.
Yeah.
But one thing, for example, that's still done today that I mean, anyone, any birth worker will question why it's done, is midwives in some trusts are still encouraged to lay a hand on a laboring person's abdomen and write down an assessment of how strong the contraction is, right? How on earth can you, with your hand on someone's abdomen, accurately state how strong their contraction is? So, and they also don't have all the information in the sense that they don't know how you're feeling. They don't know what kind of threshold you have and how determined you are, how self-assured you are, because that's so much of it. You know, it's not just about pain levels. So they have part of the picture, and it's probably a different part of the picture from what you have, but you have part of the picture too, and a part of the picture that they don't have.
Which I suppose is why communication is so important, isn't it, with your medical team, that so it's a two-way street, so that, you know, you're both sharing. And I suppose that's where sometimes certainly I know that I fell down, was because I didn't feel that I was able to maybe have that conversation. And I bet the majority of midwives, obstetricians, whoever else you speak to, will be like, we're not that terrifying, you know, speak to us. So I guess, and again, you know, we're constantly being told on the news that NHS is under pressure, the NHS this, the NHS that, and you think, I just don't want to put pressure on it by saying my tummy feels a bit weird. You know, it's just silly stuff like that. Or, you know, I think as well, from the point of view of being offered membrane sweeps, I'm thinking, well, it's a really busy unit up there, I just want to, you know, get started. And you think, so actually some of us can be a little bit guilty of putting maybe the medical teams, or maybe I'm revealing, oversharing about myself here, but almost putting them before ourselves, because we think, oh, I don't want to be a burden, you know.
Time. I mean, again, so just looking out of birth for a second, when COVID was at its highest, you had people genuinely unwell at home, not calling into their GPs because they didn't want to burden the system.
Yep.
Even though they were genuinely unwell. And that's the case for a lot of pregnant people. They're genuinely not feeling right, whether it's physical or psychological, doesn't matter at all. Mm-hmm. But there's something that they're not feeling right about. Talking about that with your care provider is not burdening the system. And I know that feeling of not wanting to burden the system that's already at max capacity and they're struggling, but that is what they're there for. Mm-hmm. And they would never, I mean, you know, it's always a fine line between making it really clear that this isn't midwife bashing, because the stories and the experiences I've had with midwives here in the Lothians are fantastic. I don't have one bad word to say about a midwife I've met personally or a story that I've had. It's not about that. It's about the system as a whole and how busy it is and how short on time everybody is. And an individual midwife who is a genuine caring person will never turn you away or fob you off. If you come to them with a genuine concern, they won't ever do that. Mm-hmm. And they'll be glad that you did. Mm-hmm. They will, because that's what they want to do. You don't get into midwifery because you don't like women. You get into it because you desperately want to support them through one of the most enormous moments of their lives.
And it comes back to that safety thing as well, isn't it? It's like, as human beings, the more we connect and the more we share with other people, the more we feel connected, the more we feel safe with them. So when you think about it with your relationship with the midwife, and, you know, often we're meeting our birthing midwife for the first time when we go into the ward, but having that two-way conversation is a source of connection with them. You'll feel safer with them. So, but I guess we could go down the patriarchy route here, Julie, you know, but we are all conditioned, aren't we, to just be like, oh, kind of step back.
And I think it's unfortunate, you know, that we don't have this continuity of care as standard. in maternity care here. And a lot of trusts are working really hard to have it. So continuity of care, meaning that we see the same midwife antenatally through birth and postnatally and through into as long as we are with a midwife until we get passed over to a health visitor, although even then having the same person would be fantastic as well. So having a bit of a real rapport with someone who's caring for you is, I mean, this is what doulas do. It's the idea of having a relationship that's constant throughout your maternity care as a whole, because it gives you that feeling of safety, the kind of safety to speak up, to say how you're feeling, all that kind of stuff. Sometimes a doula is it's someone who acts as your advocate, but actually I think more often than not, in my experience, more often than not, it's just the fact of having somebody in the room that you feel confident around, that you feel has kind of got your back, enables you to say what you're feeling. It doesn't, you don't end up going through the doula at all. It's just having a presence in the room that makes you feel strong and able to do what feels right for you. And that doesn't have to be a doula, you know, that can just be an incredibly supportive partner or a midwife that you have a relationship with. You get these awful stories, and generally they don't happen. I've not heard of it happening here. I've heard anecdotally of it happening, but not here. But these stories of people saying that they've handed in their laminated birth plan, and the midwives laugh and say, oh, well, this one's going to end up as a C-section because it's so thoroughly planned. Those things come up anecdotally. But generally, I think having a conversation with your midwife when you go in and just running through the most important parts of your plan and just getting a bit of conversation going is a really good starting place. So you get to know each other a wee bit.
And I think that, I mean, that's a whole other podcast that I could talk about birth journeys for days. But I think that's a really important thing. And that's something that I often talk about. We often talk about it in class, because I do remember actually turning up on the labor ward with my birth plan. Now, she didn't say, well, that's going to end in a C-section. She should have put money on the lottery if she'd said that. But anyway, she kind of said, because mine was like, I'm off to the birth center, you know, this, that, and the other. And I think if I had been better prepared, and maybe if that lady hadn't been about to go off shift, a conversation could have been had at that point. Because I went in and then, oh, do you want to show me your birth plan? And of course, I present her this non-induction birth center plan. And here I was on the labor ward about to be induced. And I think at that point, probably if I had been able to advocate myself a little bit better, if I'd had a doula, if my partner had been a bit more with it as well, we just turned up like rabbits in the headlights. At that point, it would have been a great time to say, okay, this was my plan. Can you help me try to reframe it? But again, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? She just kind of said, oh, well, we're probably not going to follow that then, are we? No, probably not.
Well, do you know what, though? This is my actual main belief about birth preparation, right? It's a little bit of preparing you for what your options might be, what an induction is, what augmentation is, how to have a gentle C-section if that's the way you're going. You know, it's a little bit of the practicalities of it. But like I said at the beginning, I can give you all the tools who are really going to benefit mostly from taking a little bit of time to, sounds a bit, get ready to, for me to go all hippy dippy on you, for you to just learn to believe in yourself. Because the birth plan won't go to plan. And I don't mean it'll go terribly, but, you know, there's no such thing as a birth plan. So you can pretty much, you can put all your time and energy into planning everything. And you know that it's going to go slightly one way or another. But the real benefit, you cannot know who your care provider is going to be unless you have a private arrangement. You cannot know what medications you're going to end up opting for or not opting for. You cannot know where physically you're going to end up being exactly. You can, you know, you can hope for a pool, you can hope for a shower. You might end up being sent to a different room that doesn't have a pool, you know. You can't plan any of this. The one thing you can plan 100% is your own self-belief. And you can think about what makes you feel safe, what makes you feel confident, what makes you feel able to stand up and, you know, be yourself. And you can spend weeks or months preparing for birth, getting into that state of mind, knowing that no matter what's come before and no matter what's going to come, because another one is trusting your body. Lots of people mm-hmm. think, right, I need to learn to trust my body. Lots of people don't trust their bodies because of either previous births or other things, infertility or difficult journeys to get where they are, or something totally unrelated to pregnancy, you know? Mm-hmm. Lots of people can't even trust their body. And I wouldn't say that's something you have to get over. You are who you are. You have the trust and the belief and everything that you have, and the fears that you have. Nobody can tell you get rid of that. But learning to believe in yourself and your ability to cope with what gets thrown at you, mm-hmm. you're learning that you can, that you are the person who can make the best decisions for you and your baby. So that when you're in labor, no matter what gets thrown at you, no matter how unprepared you are or prepared you are for it all, you can look inwards and go, no, do you know what? I can do this. I can make this decision because I'm the best person to make this decision. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's kind of going back to that intuition, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's really deep. And I think that is what gets us towards a really positive experience and helps us deal with whatever comes at us.
Yeah. 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 Not having to be in control, isn't it? We're always, always wanting to be in control, I guess. And if you can be a bit more open or with the situation as it unfolds and trust yourself and trust your body within that, that's one of the things to learn. And I guess coming to your classes, of course, do discuss a lot of this with the class, in your classes with your parents. Is this the sort of thing that you do in your classes?
Well, I try to stick to a script. but I do tend to go off on a little rant, as you might have noticed. But yeah, it's a big mix, isn't it? I think a big mix is important, but it's the practical side of birth. It's the physiological side of birth. It's what could happen in an ideal world and what you might need, what other tools there are to help it happen if we need help. But it's definitely a lot as well about just remembering that it's a cliche, but it's your body, it's your birth, it's your baby. This isn't your care provider's experience. This isn't even your partner's experience. This is not your mother-in-law's experience either. She'll probably have opinions. This is your experience, and you only get one shot at this one, you know, every birth is different, but you're only going to get one shot at this one. So yeah, there's a lot of me trying to help remind people that it is okay to stand up for yourself and it's not confrontational. People often worry about being confrontational, say, oh, you know, I'm not the kind of person that likes to be confrontational in those situations. It doesn't have to be confrontational.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of again, that's just a lot of our psychology, isn't it? That we're like, oh, what if we say this and what if this happens? And well, what if you say this and what if there's a different outcome? And I'm really into sort of the whole CBT kind of background as well, you know, that whole testing it, you know, just have an experiment. Just at your next midwife appointment, just say something. What's the worst that's going to happen? You know, before you even get into the actual place of birthing your baby, you know, you can sort of dip your toe in that water of having a conversation with your midwife ahead of time and see how that goes. You know, I'm sure you'll be pleasant.
The question as simple as, could you explain that a little bit more?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even if you actually already know what the answer is, but just, yeah, as you say, kind of dipping your toe in the water, just trying it out, seeing what happens, because realistically what's going to happen is, yeah, sure, I'll explain a little bit more. No problem. What do you want to know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think also, because we were talking about brain, obviously, earlier, but another really important thing that comes up more and more recently, I think, is the suggestion, and when I say suggestion, it's a very strong suggestion, that when you are at appointments, what's often explained to you is the relative risk of things. So by that, I mean, if you do, like in my previous, like I was saying earlier on, if you do X, or if you take, you know, I don't know, if we have go ahead with an induction, your chance of whatever is going to increase to this or reduce to this, right? So that's relative risk. It's the risk of something comparing with whether or not you do something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really, really unhelpful for a birthing person who is not in medicine and doesn't know all the stats, because being told your risk is going to double, your risk of something is going to double, is meaningless, but quite terrifying, actually. Like, doubling your risk of something sounds massive. You wouldn't want to double your risk of anything negative in labor or in birth or for yourself or for your baby.
Mm-hmm.
So the key here is, when you're given that kind of information, is asking for what the absolute risk is. So that's a percentage. Your chance is going to increase from 0 point something, mm-hmm, very, very small to 0 point double that something very, very small, but still very, very, very small most of the time. So there's a lot of this when it comes to due dates or gestational diabetes, mm-hmm, or maternal age, the age of the birthing person. You know, there's a lot of this, these relative risks that get thrown around. Ah, okay, well, if you're over 40, then your chance of this is going to increase by this much.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, if you look at the absolute risk of most of these things, they are minuscule. They're worth knowing, yes. They're definitely worth knowing. And then you can make your decision based on that information. But you can't make your information based on having half of that information, only knowing the relative risk. So those are two really important terms that I think it's really good for all pregnant people to know those terms and to get comfortable with asking that kind of information. And it's kind of tying in with what you were saying there, because quite often at your antenatal midwife appointments, let's say you're kind of 35, 36 weeks, your midwife might start talking about inductions. And that's the point where you might be told, well, we're thinking about inducing you at whatever weeks because of this and because of your risk being this. And that's when you can get into practice and you can say, okay, thanks for that information. What's the absolute risk that we're talking about here? Just so I have all the information. And then you write that down because you've brought your notepad and your pen, or you've recorded it. And so, yeah, those are the brain acronym and actually the relative and absolute risk idea. I think those are really important things for pregnant people to know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny as you were saying that, I was sitting having a little giggle because obviously my previous life was as a scientist. So I know all about how numbers can be represented one way to look another. And that's another thing as well. You know, people are scared of publications. Do not be scared of publications. You can, you know, ask to see some of these publications. People think, oh, I can't read a scientific paper. No, but you can scan your eyes to them quickly to pull out the most relevant information. So definitely ask for the publications as well to say, well, where is this evidence coming from? Or have a look in the NICE guidelines. It's really accessible, the NICE guidelines as well, to just Google it. I'm constantly
also
Googling.
I know you can see this, but no one else. The AIMS books, they're a series of books that are, they're really, really short, but they're just all about statistics,
mm-hmm,
very specific statistics. So there's things like, there's one on induction of labor, there's one on gestational diabetes, there's one on group B strep. And so they're really accessible, really short, and there's no faff in them, and they're not presented like a paper. It's information and statistics, evidence-based information put in a format that's short and easy to understand. And, you know, I'm always saying to parents, expectant parents in my classes, just come and borrow my books. I've got 300 books here that I want to share with people. But you know, there are easy ways of getting this information. if you don't know where to get it, it can seem daunting. But there are people like you and me and you just sending a message and saying, do you have any information on this? I'm not an oracle. I don't know everything. A lot of the time when I have doula clients who have a particular, let's say it's gestational diabetes, something like that. My mind's a bit of a sieve, if I'm honest. I read a book and 3 days later, I've forgotten half of it. So I'm digging out my gestational diabetes book and I'm looking up the stats again and I'm taking screenshots and emailing them over. And, you know, there are people, if you don't know where to get the information, it can be daunting, but there are ways of finding out that information. And your midwife should be happy to provide that information.
Yeah.
But if they're not, for whatever reason, or if you're not getting the answers that you think you deserve, then get it elsewhere, definitely.
Definitely. And I suppose on that, Julia, then we can say, where can we find you for more about your classes, or if anyone's interested in the Lothians contacting you about having this wonderful advocate at their birth, this wonderful doula, where can we find out more about you?
There are lots of wonderful doulas in the area, but I can be found at my website, which is juliaidier.co.uk, where you can find all the classes and the workshops and the doula information. And I also quite often just do little ad hoc, you know, if you've been here and done this, it's not your first rodeo, you're onto your second or third baby, but actually you want to know a little bit more about birthright, or you want to know a little bit more about induction because it's the first time that this is being suggested for you, or, you know, so I do little one-offs like that as well, if anybody kind of just wants a little blast of information and a chance to talk things through. So yeah, you can find me there, and I'm at Doula Julia Idir on Facebook and Instagram. You can find me everywhere.
Julia's Instagram is amazing, actually. I love Julia's Instagram. I get lots of facts on it. I'm always like, oh, that's a fact. And her weekend
crass and sweary sometimes, but you get used to it.
Well,
I managed to keep my language quite nice for this.
Today, well done. I need to tell Apple there's no swearing in it. But otherwise, it's all good. Yeah, we need a bit of swearing in life, especially with everything that's happening at the moment. My goodness. But I will tag all Julia's information on the episode as well, so you can go there. But her Instagram is definitely worth a little check out, even if it's just for the weekend quiz. I live for Julia's weekend quiz. I love it. I always get so nervous if I don't get the birth questions right. I'm like, oh no. Back to the study books. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us today, Julia. It's been wonderful to talk to you about birthrights, and we will see you on the next episode. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to catch the next episode. If you can't wait till then, give us a follow on Instagram and Facebook at Esk and Ivy, or check out our website www.eskandivy.co.uk.